He's right in front of me, and I can honestly tell him that I'm going to knock him spark out. Leaping right hand by the Prince. Ooh. And a hard left. And Kelly's down for the third time.
Whoa! He's for real. The
unbelievable.
For real.
One more punch. And Carter has gone. Baron is the champion of the world. Baron is the champion of the world.
Hello and welcome to Off The Brawl on Off The Ball. I'm Ronan Mullen. With me, as ever, are Phil Egan and Simon Maguire. And I'm delighted to say this week we're joined by another pillar of the Irish boxing community, Kevin Byrne. Kevin, thanks for coming in.
Thanks, Ron.
How's life?
Very good, yeah.
I believe we dragged you away from Five-A-Side to be here today, didn't we?
Since being cancelled because of the...
The torrential weather.
Well, so they say, you know.
Yeah. And Phil, it's finally here, fight week,
yeah.
The one we've all been looking forward to. Creed against Drago.
Yeah, I actually haven't heard any spoilers. I'm trying to stay away from them because I know there was a preview screening last week, which I couldn't attend.
Yeah.
But I need to see it this week before word gets out what happens.
I see everyone and their mother are being invited to this premiere during the weekend.
Yeah, I'll be
work here. Obligations, Phil, do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Champions League week.
That's it. Like, I can't walk away, but... I'm looking forward to it.
And Simon, do you think you're giving Creed much of a chance here? Is it a Chris Eubanks syndrome where he's kind of struggling to live up to his father's billing?
Well, if you go by the clips, he obviously loses a fight in the film because he's in a hospital bed at one stage.
Well, I was trying to stay out from spoiler alerts there.
But it's in the ad.
Yeah, but I wasn't really looking at the ad.
Well, why would you want to go see the film if you haven't seen that?
Because it's Creed.
But it was terrible, and then the very last minute they just go... Drago, I was like, definitely want to see it now.
Okay, I'm going to see it with you anyway.
Alright, fine, don't.
Well, the hype's begun, but on the agenda this week, we'll also look ahead to the other big heavyweight clash between Deontay Wilder and Tyson Fury. We'll also hear from Andy Lee. He's been doing some roving reporting on OTBA and filling in for Owen Sheehan, who may or may not be preparing for a boxing match against Tony McGregor.
Yeah.
I don't know if that's why he's off. Maybe it is, maybe it isn't.
He's in camp. Has he gone to Big Bear? Where's the equivalent of Big Bear and Kerry?
I don't know. Karen Toole?
Yeah, could be. Yeah.
Get up to altitude.
Yeah.
So Andy was chatting to Ray Moylett and Ryan Burnett. We'll bring you those interviews later on. Before that, though, there's only one place to start, and that's with events in New Delhi, as Ireland crowned its latest lightweight champion of the world, Kelly Harrington.
Right. Congratulations, Kelly Harrington. How can we intro you except to say world champion? How does that feel?
It feels a bit surreal, but I'm getting there slowly. I think like next week it'll really kick in when all of this is calmed down, because I haven't actually had a sleep since the weigh-in yesterday, so I'm still like going, so I'm a bit tired, so I'm all over the shop, but yeah, it will kick in eventually.
It must be a great feeling though, because we all know, all elite athletes, you have to work hard, but your road to the top, it hasn't been easy.
No, it's never been easy, but like, I mean, if it was easy, then everybody would be doing it. So that's the fun part, you know.
When you look back on your career, though, can you think of what was the point that perhaps led you to this point here today? What was the day, the moment that you said, I am going to be world champion?
I don't know. I've always had a mentality of like, I'm kind of a strong-minded person. Like, so once I set my mind on anything, then I can achieve it, you know. So, Once I start believing that I was going to be a world champion, I knew I could. Like,
and you took the hard path there as well. You dropped a weight. I mean, I know that's hard for everyone. It's harder for women than for men. Can you tell us a little bit more about that?
It hasn't actually been that hard. I'm very disciplined in what I do, so my diet is great. We have a fantastic nutritionist, Sharon, out in the Institute of Sport. So everything falls into place. The only thing that I struggle with is having to cut the chocolate out, like, you know. And but I still eat all my meals. I still eat 4 or 5 times a day, even the day before I weigh in, so it's not like I'm starving myself or anything, you know. It's just me guilty little pleasures that I can't have, and when I can't have them, I feel like my world has ended. But I'll be having enough of them now for the month of December. So
I was just going to say, anyone listening to this, the next question they're going to want me to ask is, what chocolate does Kelly Harrington crave when you really want to have some? What are you going to be treating yourself to?
Any chocolate will do the job for me. I'm not fussy. I'll eat anything, yeah.
All jokes aside, obviously you will go and you will enjoy yourself over the next few days and weeks and let this soak in. You're a world champion, you should let it soak in. But I mean, there's a little matter of Olympic qualification coming up next.
Yeah, the Olympic qualifiers will be next year, but we'll take it one step at a time. It's one round at a time, 1 minute at a time. You know, I'm just going to enjoy today and we'll cross that bridge when we come to it. We have the national next year, so we'll get through them first and we'll go from there.
You say taking it one round at a time. That fight you were in, I mean, it really was one round at a time. The decisions, people were watching that, you know, their hands on their faces, not sure which way would go. What were you thinking during that fight?
Well, I knew the fourth round was close. And I knew it, like, I come back to the corner and I was like, right, I have to change something now when I go out here. Never lost focus, stayed calm, controlled. I knew second round I have to go out here, throw that jab as much as I can. So I just went out, throwing the jab, start landing with the jab as well, start doing what I do, and I just started taking it back into Kelly Harrington mode. So yeah, started to cruise it then.
Yeah, because you are one of those fighters, you do like to be in control of a fight. Some fighters don't mind kind of being on the behind and coming in off the back foot. You like to be in control, so how do you keep your mind focused on that?
Just staying focused all the time, just from the start when I go in, like, just staying in control of the fight, you know, from the minute I walk out to the minute I'm finished. It's only 9 minutes you're in there for, like, I mean, what is 9 minutes? Like, when you train all year for it, what's 9 minutes?
Finally, I won't keep you. There's a lot of people here who want to talk to you, and obviously proud parents, family members. What does it feel to come through these arrival doors with those cheers with a gold medal around your neck?
Amazing. Like, it's just, it's amazing because I've got so much off my community, you know, like, over the years I've got so much support from the community. To be able to walk through these doors here today and come through as a world champion, like, it's just amazing. It's giving back something. It's lifting the community, lifting the spirits, you know. And I'm always saying it, we are a great community. We're always there for each other, good times, bad times, we're there.
It's really emotional for you, actually, I can tell.
Yeah, I love my community. I'm very proud. I'm Dublin One. I'm proud always. If I doesn't matter where I am, I'll always be Dublin One. You can take me out of Dublin One, but you can't take Dublin One out of me.
Well, I think Dublin One and all of Dublin, all of Ireland are very proud of you this evening, Kelly Harrington. Gur míle maith.
Thank you.
There you have it. Kellyanne Harrington is Ireland's latest world amateur champion and the first Irish boxer to medal in two different weight categories at that level. Kevin, we'll probably speak about the championships more broadly, but with Kelly in particular, it felt sort of inevitable. She was on top form all the way through, wasn't she?
Yeah, she performed really well. Five fights in a week and five wins as well. Any rounds she lost, she rectified. But in the following round, she looked superior to all her opponents. She fought an Indian girl and everything appeared to be against her. The Indians were on the crest of a wave and she possibly even lost a round in there as well. But she managed to have a strong third and win as well. It's just a brilliant week for her and vindication of the backing she's got for the year, for the last couple of years. And an upgrade on silver is brilliant as well. Like,
yeah. And Phil, I think you were tweeting about those outside forces that Kevin's talking about.
The, yeah.
There was this almost intangible sway that the Indians were being, you know.
Yeah, well, like, there was eight Indians in the quarterfinals, and I know we would have been watching the fights on the streams, which weren't the most reliable at times, just like some of the judges. But Amy Broadhurst was the fight that really stood out.
As if Dundalk people haven't been through enough.
I know. Like, it's been a tough week for Dundalk, and watching the fight beforehand, the Indian fighter definitely got a very favourable decision.
And Sonia.
Yeah.
I think it was, yeah.
I remember tweeting just beforehand thinking Amy Broadhurst is going to have to, like, it's going to have to be absolutely no question about this decision for her to win. And I watched the first few rounds and just the way the schedule was, I had to go into the studio and do a bulletin, but I was able to stream the fight on YouTube on the and I was watching it, and then just as I was coming to the end of my bulletin, there was a clip playing, but I saw the two fighters there and I saw them raising the Indian's hand, and I just thought, because obviously there was her opponent, Amy Broadhurst knocked her opponent down in the final round, and also she got a point taken off her. Just horrible judging, but, like, the problem is we're not surprised anymore. I mean, we saw what happened, Michael Conlon, in the Olympics, and it's just very hard. It's hard to think that if you're waiting for the Olympics in 2 years, you could put all this training in and the same thing could happen.
That's it, yeah.
Like, Conlon went to the Olympics as the red hot favourite and trained. Like, it was not, obviously it wasn't a good Olympics for the boxers, but you still had that feeling, right, Michael Conlon, he'll get the job done because he's just so much better than everyone. And then he got shafted.
Simon, what do you make of events in New Delhi?
Yeah, well, the Broadhurst one, she put up a clip of when she landed a beautiful left hook, and the ref's like, oh, that, like, you can't even joke about it. Like, what, the other one too hard? Like, what was the point for? Like, it's incomprehensible what, like, anytime an Irish fighter loses a decision, you kind of go, judges this, judges that.
Yeah.
But when you see landing clean in the face and then getting a point deducted, there's just no explanation for it. So robbery would be the only way of describing it.
Robbery is definitely an overused word by those of us who'd watch these streams from outer Mongolia or whatever. Because you do watch them. Like the Broadhurst one has gone into my top five Irish robberies this decade.
Yeah.
And I think Darren O'Neill against Azerbaijan in an Olympic qualifier. Have to nearly include Joe Ward against the Turkish guy, even though nobody has seen it apart from the Ireland camp. But they held so loud against Bahram Muzaffar, and Joe Ward was the best light heavyweight in Europe at the time, and Muzaffar did nothing afterwards, and the Turks were getting a lot of decisions in an Olympic choir in Turkey. I think Conlon against Nikitin, and there was...
To go back to that one, and Paddy Barnes was fighting in that Turkish qualifying event, and he'd already qualified at this stage, and he was in the final, and he beat the head off your man. So much out that the Turkish guy at the end was leaning on the ropes going, thank God that's over, and they gave the Turkish guy the decision. And Barnes was walking out. He was nearly about to jump over the table at the judges. Like, it was.
If you were to read results from that competition, Turkey are the strongest boxing nation in the world.
Yeah.
But that's just the competition that took place in Turkey. Yeah. Like, Broadhurst beat, like you were saying, I was reading your tweets and about what Broadhurst was going to have to do. She's going to have to perform amazingly. And she did put in one of the best Irish performances of the week. But the referee did warn her a couple of times about the slapping or the use of the forearm. And I just didn't see it. Now, it's obviously difficult on a stream watching it from the other side of the world, and you might have a different perspective ringside, but I think Amy was as nonplussed as anybody else.
Yeah. Even the commentary, because it was very hometown commentary.
Yeah.
Even they were saying, Broadhurst is the better fighter here.
Yeah, because, like, as well as that, like I was saying, robbery is an overused word, but you do kind of watch these fights and think, can I give the opponent the round? So maybe generously you might give the opponent, the Indian girl, the second round. But then Broadhurst, if it was at 1-1 going into the third round, she needed to win it decisively. She did. She probably a 10-8 round, knocked her down, beat her up, and then for them to raise the Indian's hand at the end was quite galling. It was, I'd say she's fairly devastated because after Broadhurst lost the Irish final to Kelly Harrington this year, she went off to England. She became ABA champion, and she got herself to these world championships at 64 kilos, up a couple of pounds from Kelly Harrington, and she needed a serious performance and Kelly Harrington to maybe not take gold in order to push herself into Olympic contention next. And just the way the judges have looked at the fights has kind of undermined her bid now, and that could put her in the back seat now looking towards Tokyo. So it'll be an interesting race on that one as well. Broadhurst against Kelly Harrington, getting the 60 kilo vest for Tokyo.
Like, it might seem trite to say it, but do you think there is a concerted effort at these tournaments to favour the hometown fighters, or is it more just like human nature, sort of, do you know?
Probably a bit of both. Like, India looked to have hosted the tournament quite well. They supported their fighters, and that can sway the judges when people are screaming their heads off for like, you know yourself, watching the shows in England, a jab lands for a home guy, crowd goes nuts. Yeah. The other guy, the Ukrainian, walks down the home guy and beats the crap out of him, and everyone goes quite silent. And so those kind of forces can transpire in these international tournaments as well. But I definitely think there's a trend to probably reward the country that have put up the people for the entire week, probably paid the money, and as well as that, hosting a major tournament is going to be a big boost to boxing in those countries. Like India, how many kids in India are going to go out and probably start boxing now, pick up the sport because of the success of their girls in the world championships? That's kind of the payoff, that's the unsaid thing. And then you hear rumours about backroom deals and stuff like that, but I'm not going to get into any of that because you don't have proof or anything like that either. But those allegations are constantly thrown around as well.
Yeah, and those allegations are rife in the pro game as well. But in that instance, I always feel it's more ineptitude from the judges. Like, people don't know what they're watching.
Yeah.
But in the amateur game, it does seem a bit more there's like an underlying poison in it that I just feel there is like something untoward going on, and it's going to be hard to root it out. Like, obviously it's well well covered. The Olympic boxing system is under pressure at the moment, so
they brought in extra judges to try and cut it out.
Yeah,
but it doesn't seem to have worked. And even you think back to previous tournaments, like you were getting the score after every round, whereas that wasn't the case at these championships. Correct me if I'm wrong, I'm pretty sure at the Olympics that was scored after every round.
Yeah,
because I can remember being in the office watching the Conlon fight, and somebody was going, "Oh, is Michael Conlon fighting?"
Mm.
I was like, "How's he getting on?" I was like, he's destroying him in the first round. Yeah. Then the point came in that McKeaton was given the first round. I was like, "Jesus!" I said, "This is a disaster. He's going to get done here because he clearly won the first round, but all the judges gave it to the Russian." So even if you go that way, you know, there's still the ability to give the rounds who you want to give them to.
Well, just to follow up on that particular Conlon fight, I mean, they were showing the scores after each round, and Conlon looked up to Paddy Barnes in the crowd after outboxing McKeaton, and Barnes was like, they gave him the round. And Conlon, what? So he changed completely and went out to try and smack the head off him, and he did. So much so that the guy who won the fight couldn't fight in the next fight.
Yeah, forget to add that in as well. Yeah.
And like, look at, after the 2016 Olympics, which country was embroiled in the most controversy in terms of unfair decisions that went their way? It was the Russians, like in the heavyweight final, and in Conlon's fight. The Russian gift decisions really caused a worldwide controversy. And if we're looking at hosting tournaments, being influential in picking up medals and stuff, the men's and women's world championships next year are in Russia, both them.
Ah, of course, they
Sochi
are, yeah.
And Siberia, like, so.
Yeah,
and their Olympic qualifiers.
Yeah,
Russia are going to pile a load of boxers into the Olympics, take major medals. And I know Russia are an easy scapegoat, fall guy or whatever, but they're going to host these tournaments and they're going to do well.
Yeah,
for sure.
It's disheartening.
Yeah. Like, there was an air of like Katie's kids about this new crop of female fighters in Ireland. Like, she's kind of inspired this new generation to come through. But unfortunately, given the circumstances we've spoken about there, they might be more inclined to turn pro. Like, Katie's obviously paved the way for that as well and shown there is money to be made if you turn professional. Do you think they might be more inclined to, given the corruption that's at play, maybe just go their own way and turn pro earlier?
I think a lot of the corruption in Olympic boxing tends to be sending a lot of boys and men towards the pro ranks. The women are now outperforming the men in Irish boxing in terms of getting international medals in the amateur arena. I think this year, of the 40-plus medals they've got at junior, youth and senior, I think 8 of the 10 goals they've got have been female goals, and the majority of those 40 plus medals have been to women, to female boxers. So they seem to be filling the ranks, and IEBA are introducing 5 weights now for the Olympic Games for the female boxing as well, so I think that's going to grow. I don't know if a lot of them are going to be sent towards the pro ranks, because pro ranks for women, you need a lot to turn pro. You know yourself, you've been at the Katie fights.
Mm-hmm.
It's one female fight on a 10 fight card with 9 male pros, and you know, you need a big name, big reputation.
Katie's the top end, like, so I don't know how lucrative it would be for some of the young Irish fighters to go pro. Like, the Olympics is still what their dream is.
Just, it's a lot to commit to
risk,
more years and then be done over by it. Like, at least if you take your career in your own hands in the way other fighters have done. Like, it's obviously more it's more prominent in the male side of things, where like the likes of Jason Quigley just turned pro early. So I take the point that maybe it's not quite as lucrative for the female boxers, but if these things keep happening, like, I know Grainne Walsh has been on the wrong side of a couple of questionable things, and like, her style is probably the most suitable to pro fighter. So, and like, having spoken to her a couple of months ago, like, Katie Taylor was the reason that she turned pro, and if she's not going to be able to follow in her footsteps, like, I can't see her sticking around necessarily. But just on Kelly herself, like, it's just great to see her getting this, like, the homecoming and whatnot. Like, she's finally getting the credit she deserves. She was probably in the shadows a little bit in the last couple of years, but that was a bit of a coming out party for her, wasn't it?
Yeah, like, I've always had an interest in Kelly Harrington because I first met her, she was working in the local gym that I was in, and like, when you join a gym, you get free classes or you get a free assessment. So it just happened to be Kelly Harrington who was assigned to me, and just got chatting away. She was like, I was saying I did a little bit of boxing and skipping to kind of stay fit. And on, like, at the time, I didn't know anything about Kelly Harris. I was like, what about yourself? And she's like, oh yeah, I do a little bit, like, you know. But, you know, then a few years later, I'm watching her in world finals and winning national titles. So she was quite modest then. And I just, when I saw her winning the other day, you could just see what it meant to her. And I was delighted to see the turnout she got at the airport. And she was very proud of what it means for Dublin One as well.
And she's got a tremendous style as well, like switch hitting. She can have it any way that you want it, really. I think Bernard Dunn was making that point, that she's one of the most complete fighters to ever come through that system. So, you know, it's just brilliant that she capped off what was a pretty successful tournament on the whole for the Irish scene. Simon, you have some thoughts on elsewhere in the World Championships. What was your takeaway?
Yeah, well, it's just to pay tribute to Mary Calm, who won her... She was tied to Katie Taylor for 5 world titles, and she won her 6th there at the Games. And funny enough, Billy Walsh, the USA coach and former Irish coach, just said a few words about her. She deserves her 6th title, coming back at 35 and beating all opposition. She breaks your heart. She never gives you peace, never lets you rest. Her aggression is the mainstay of her game, and she's a never-say-die attitude a boxer should have. She fights to the last bell, and one can only respect her. She's been legendary. She was there at the beginning of female boxing movement, flying the flag for the sport. And that's via the Indian Express. So I think it's just important to kind of, you know, she has now elevated herself above Katie Taylor in the amateur game in world titles. And I think it's just, we should kind of acknowledge that, you know.
Yeah, for sure. And moving to the male side of things, one man who's taken the step from amateur to pro is Ray Moylett. He headlines a great card in Castlebar on Friday week. And he caught up with our own Andy Lee to chat about that and more earlier on.
How are you getting on? Because this is... a big couple of weeks for you now, right?
Yeah, so it is a big couple of weeks, you know, but it's not any different. Like, I'm still preparing for a fight, you know, but there's a couple of different factors that are coming to play with this, you know. So it's a homecoming, which is my first time fighting at home in front of a big crowd, you know. It's live on TG4, which is a good plug as well. And there's a top 15 world ranking at stake. So it's for the WBC international title. There's a lot of stuff that can happen after this, you know, but in my head it's just another fight, you know, just to prepare for that, get the weight down, make sure sparring is going well, and, you know, I need to try and keep composed as well, because at home there's a good buzz around town, you know, we know how Mayo support is, you know, they're getting on top of the bandwagon with, like the footballers when it's time for Sam Maguire, you know, they go mad in the countries or in the counties. So it's good that I'm up here in Dublin away from all that. And I could go home the weekends, and I still get to feel it, you know, experience it. But I still can't take my eye off the prize, which is December 7th, you know. So that's the most important thing at the minute.
So what are you working on at the moment in terms of your strategy for the fight?
Yeah, so I'm working with Paddy Collins here in Blanchardstown. This guy is a step up of what I'd be used to. He's a typical Mexican fighter. He's come forward, he's durable, he's tough. He's a boxer like myself, I think. You know, he likes his single shots and he's a bit flashy. I think he's the same attributes that I have, but I think I'm more powerful and I've quicker hands than him. And I think that'll come to play in the latter rounds. I think it'll be 50-50 for the first 4 or 5 rounds, whereas I'll wear him down, and I can maybe look good in the last 5, you know. I haven't done 10 rounds yet, I've only done it in training, and it's completely different than a fight, so I'm looking forward to it. It's a challenge and it's a test and it's a step up, and this is, when I turned professional just 2 years ago, this is the fights I want to be put into, you know.
What are you doing in training with Paddy, what for this opponent specifically?
So Paddy's actually, he's all the body bag on him and all the gear bag, and he's lying in on top of me, you know, basically keeping the pressure on me, you know, because I can box, I'm a good counter puncher, I can box, I can move, and I'm nearly moving too much, you know, for the pro ranks, for 10 rounds, I won't be able to move like that. So I will get into a position where I have to stand and I have to trade and I have to fight, and, you know, that's inevitable, that's going to happen in the fight. So once I can prepare for that, I know that's coming. I need to work on that, because I'm boxing 20 years now at this stage, you know, so the moving and the simpler stuff, it nearly comes natural to me now. So Paddy is trying to drill in the fact to stand and sit on my punches, you know, because I've good defense, so I'm able to trade with these guys. I don't need to be getting out of danger, because I'm good enough to be in that pocket. But, you know, it's frustrating for me. I feel I think I can move all the time, you know, because it's what I've known, you know. But the professional game is, there's different tactics that come into play and different in a fight, you know. And
how long did it take you, Andy, to get used to that?
I think you're always learning. And it's probably the biggest adjustment you have to make, isn't it? The footwork. Especially when you've been drilled in the Irish coaching system, because it's high, the footwork is, it's very emphasised, and it's high energy footwork. You know, you're always on your toes and you're bouncing. And in the pro game, it's more about stepping. It's not about bouncing. I think there is a time to bounce, but it's more about stepping. And it's conditioning your legs for that. And also sitting low on your legs. It's a different thing. Where the amateur game, you're kind of upright and your legs are almost straight. Not vertical, but straight. Where in the pro game, you're always sitting down into your legs, squatting. And that's a different conditioning as well.
Yeah, like even I might trade.
I'll give you, let me tell you. Yeah. It's easier in the fight than it is in the sparring. The sparring is harder because you'll have the energy of the crowd, you'll have your adrenaline pumping, and the rounds will be passing and you won't even realize it.
Well, I'd say I realize it, all right. But like one of my main attributes as an amateur was I could hit and not get hit, you know, so I was very good at single shots. A big flashy shot that had come from the back door, like I could throw that. I was never really the aggressive.
One of the only Irish men to win the European gold medal. Very hard medal to win. Very, very hard medal to win. Harder than a world medal because every country you come up against are really good, you know. And it's...
That's a while ago now, 2011, you know,
But you were so unlucky coming to Olympic years in so many times, weren't you?
Yeah, I missed out on London by one fight for qualification out in Azerbaijan. And then, Rio, it's beyond me how it didn't happen, you know. So I missed out through the Irish selection, just two different decisions or whatever. And I got over that. But I was actually drafted in then to APB, which is amateur professional boxing. And I got an opportunity then to qualify through that rank, where the WSB and the APB fight. So they're two sort of professional bodies in amateur boxing that the amateur setup put in to stop amateur boxers going professional. Because the best amateurs go professional and it leaves the amateur scene. So they want to try and a middle of the road job. So that I actually got drafted into that. And there was five boxers in Venezuela and the top two qualified. And there was an Armenian, a very good Armenian. He's better than me, he's probably still better than me, you know, and he was always the main threat. And then there was someone from Qatar. Like, I think my mother would have bet the other three, and I was the other one. So, and the top two qualified, and if you lost the first fight, you actually got another chance to fight. If you lost the second fight, you got another chance to fight. So we were just dependent on the draw, and the draw came out. I was fighting the number one seed, which was the Armenian. So the two of us were by far ahead of the pack. But it just the way the draw worked, I missed out. You know, like he stopped the next two opponents in the first round.
Venezuela qualified. There's a lot of questions about the decisions.
Yeah,
that were
and
made
I think
the draws that were made there was.
I think that
there were a lot of
one of the guys was from Qatar, and I think they invested heavily after that or before that. I'm not sure. He got the pass, but like. It was harder for me not to qualify that time than to actually qualify. You know, that's the way I look at it. So it wasn't meant to be this time.
Wasn't there a point where you were thinking of walking away? Like you had to be kind of coaxed back?
There's a few of them points, yeah. Especially with boxing, you come up against a lot of barriers and walls that you come into. But one of the first times that I wanted to pack it in was in 2007. I was changing school. I was a 17-year-old, you know, as you do. And I was throwing the box. I was throwing the toys out of the pram, really. So I just threw it away. And after a couple of weeks, my uncle Richard Duffy and my coach now Martin Brennan, he's a cousin of mine as well. My mother got onto them, said, "Talk to this fella, you know."
Set him straight.
Come down and set him straight, yeah. Because I wasn't listening to the people closest to me, so they came down and. They persuaded me just to stay on, that the World Championships were in a couple of months, just to try them and then you can pack it in and see what happens. And then I actually went on in 2008 and I was the first Irish boxer ever to win a world amateur title. I think Kate Taylor was before me. So I won that and that sort of set the scene for myself then. Without choice, I was becoming a professional boxer then because I was part of the high performance scene.
Yeah.
I was being funded, I was being told where I needed to be, what I had to do. So by the time...
Did you respond to that? Because some people do and some people don't.
Yeah, well, I did respond to it. I did, absolutely, because it came so fast, I had no choice to do it. And by the time I knew it, I was 21, 22, and that's all I knew. You know, I'd been looked after in high form.
Your options weren't there, yeah.
And I had not that I had no options, and I'm delighted that I'm here now, you know, fighting at home in a couple of weeks' time. But I look back, and I didn't choose this. It sort of just happened, because I wanted to walk away, and I didn't get the opportunity to walk away, and then I came back a world champion. So there was sort of, I was thrown into the deep end then, you know. But again, I enjoyed it, you know, but it's something that it just happened, you know. So this
are you
is
happy now, though, that you went through that to get to the point where, like, would you, in retrospect, would you prefer to go pro at 22 and be a 5-6 year vet now?
I don't think I had the discipline to go pro at 22, and let's be honest, you know, I probably took a lot of shortcuts in my career, you know. Whereas now,
in training
and with everything, you know, mainly lifestyle, you know, it was because it was so foreign to be a professional athlete in down home where we're from. You know, it's not the done thing. So there was loads of loopholes and loads of shortcuts I could take,
yeah,
because I wasn't being surveyed or observed as much as if I was living in the city. You know, so I could escape, and I probably did a little bit much, but to be the opportunity I have now, I wouldn't change any of that. You know, I wouldn't, there's nothing more that I would want now than what I'm doing at this moment in time. Like, preparing for a massive fight at home in front of my own people, and that they're all behind me now. And the options that this will bring are endless. You know, I don't know what phone call can come on December 8th. You know, anything can happen. And, like, I'm not living the normal 9-to-5 job. I'm getting phone calls every few weeks. Like, I got a phone call during the week there of Andy, you know, to come on to this. Like, that's exciting. You know, these are things that the average people, or the normal people working every day, don't get to experience, you know. So this is living the dream, really, this side of things. I know there's ups and downs in boxing, but surely the ups are, they're phenomenal, like, you know, and you know that, you know, of ups and downs as well.
Yeah, it's a life less lived, isn't it?
Yeah.
You spoke about home, going home for this fight. How do you think you're going to handle the pressure? What are you doing to combat that, the expectancy?
Well, at the minute, I'm spending most of my time in Dublin to try and, because, again, I took shortcuts and I did let things get to myself before. So, like, there's a lot of people clapping me on the back at home, you know, saying, well done, congratulations. But in reality, there's nothing done yet. You know, this is just another fight, and that's the way I have to look at it. But I still want to be able to enjoy it, you know, because most of my fights have been in Boston or been abroad. And I feel I didn't really get to experience the whole occasion. You know, this is entertainment at the end of the day. We're professional athletes, professional boxers, and we need bums on seats for it. And in order to do that, you have to be entertaining. So I'm not so caught up in the boxing scene. I'm still a showman, you know, and I need to be, but I can't get caught up in thinking I've won already, because I haven't. This is going to be my toughest fight to date, and I'll need to pull out all the stops.
So that's Ray Moyle out there in typically a bullion form, and rightly so. It must be a great feeling to be bringing boxing back to his hometown. Are we all looking forward to this one? It looks like a good card. Like, it's a competitive card right the way down, it seems.
Very much looking forward to it, yeah. I'm taking a trip down to Mayo and on the Friday, going to get there for the first fight and hopefully stay till the last, and hopefully Ray gets his hand raised. It's, you know, I always felt when he was a good amateur, he was always bringing big crowds, busloads to the National Stadium.
Mm.
He always had the best support, probably on finals night, and I always thought he'd be a good pro. Just didn't really see it happening. He had a very good amateur style, but, you know, he's gone professional, he's built up an unbeaten record, and it seems that the people in Mayo are backing him, as they always do with their sports people. I think Ray has sold something like 800 tickets and probably going to do a few more on Fight Week. Makes him one of the biggest ticket sellers in Ireland, behind Carl Frampton. Mick Connell and Ryan Burnett have headline shows in Belfast, but they've been assisted by, you know, big undercards and the promotional outfit, but Ray hasn't had any of that, and it would appear that it's going to be a strong card.
Yeah, and you can just see his personality's oozing out of all these interviews, Phil, and he was speaking there about he was always a showman. He'd like to throw shots from the back of the hall, like one shots, which wouldn't necessarily play into the amateur ethos, but he always wanted to, like, bring this flashy stuff to the fore. Like, he's definitely, in terms of our prospects, he could be one of the most marketable, couldn't he?
Yeah, he's always been entertaining both in and out of the ring. You know, obviously most boxers do carry a very interesting story, but you know, he gets it. Like, he is very interesting to listen to. You know, the fact that so many people are going to turn up to see him, the fact that it's on TV as well is great, because I know he was on, was it Jason Quigley was shown last year?
He was afloat on that card.
He'd never, it actually, the broadcast got cut, because I remember I was looking forward to seeing it, and he was last in, but the broadcast got cut, so we didn't actually get to see it. So this is a chance, if people can't make it to Castlebar, that they can also watch it on TG Carra as well. So it's, yeah, that's what we're crying out for, because it's so long since there was a really good scene. Well, look, there's always boxing going on around the country, but you know, ones that are on TV, that's what we want. You know, we were spoiled for a few years when Bernard Dunn and Andy and Matthew Macklin were fighting in the National Stadium, and obviously that then went into the O2 as it was back then, the Three Arena, the Point, whatever you want to call it. But you know, it a few years ago that seemed very far away, but maybe we're getting back there. But you know, if we have to go to the West,
yeah,
it's great. Like, there is there's plenty of interest out West for boxing,
and Mayo are renowned for getting behind their own, so they'll obviously bring a big crowd. Simon, are you excited for that one?
Yeah, I mean, I actually spoke to him before he came on, and I was like, what are your plans for the future? You know, if he beats Urs Quetta, it put him in the rankings, and what do you think next? And he goes, no, I'm just genuinely just focused. Now, that would have been the time to talk about other things, but he was like, no, I'm genuinely, everything, just focus on this. You get this one, it sets up a lot of things. If I lose it, though, you know, it puts me way back. So he's not taking Urs Quetta for granted.
Yeah.
Now, I had a quick, there's a couple of clips of him online, and he gets clipped pretty easily with the jab. I mean, he was fighting Matthew Germain, who was his last loss, and he took about 3 jabs in the face before he went to throw himself, and he's pretty flat-footed. So you'd fancy Moylett to win pretty comfortably on points, I think.
Yeah, you spoke to Andy about the switch from amateur to pros, Kevin. Like, it's, everyone speaks about the three threes. It's very much a sprint, whereas it's a marathon in the pro game. And he talking about moving his feet movement, which would have been a key component of his game as an amateur. Do you think he's got the pro style? Do you think he can adapt well? And
yeah, I'm looking forward to seeing this fight now, because I think it's probably going to go to 10 rounds. I think neither of them have massive KO percentages. I think it's going to probably, I think Urs Quetta has 25%. You know, he's only knocked out a quarter of his wins. And yeah, so I think it's going to go to distance. I think we're going to learn a lot about what Ray Moylett can do in round 6, 7, 8, 9, whatever. It'd be nice to see him get him out of there, wouldn't it? Like, it would raise the roof off the place.
Yeah.
And, you know, because you're not going to hang too long at decent level as a professional without having a little bit of power. And we need to see a demonstration of that from Moylett as well. And that will get the TV people back as well. So
highlight reel stuff. That's just unfortunately the way things are now, that people want to see knockouts. They want to be able to pick up their phone on a Sunday or a Saturday morning, and if they didn't see the Ray Moylett fight, they're like, oh, look at that knockout. Like, that's just the way it is.
And
now,
something we're probably going to discuss later in the show, like about the Deontay Wilder against Tyson Fury fight, but Anthony Joshua was asked about it, and obviously his answer is going to be probably, you know, because it's a rival fight to him and stuff. But he said, no, I'm not going to stay up and watch the fight. I'm going to get up and watch it on social media the next morning, look at the videos. And he goes, that's what my generation does. So that a lot of people will tune in to see Moylett, but a lot of people won't, and they'll get up and they'll look on their phones, and if it's good, they might watch next time. So something exciting and a big performance. I was talking to him last night as well, and yeah, I think he's very wary of the test that's coming, and he has weight to make. He's as light as he's been in his pro career now for this fight, and I think he's really up for it.
Yeah, and in fairness, Urs Quetta comes to fight as well. This won't be a standoff technical battle. Two guys straight out of the amateurs. This is going to be two lads poking heads off each other, and it should light up the night. I do think, though, you're right. He does need the knockout. I don't think it's going to happen.
No, I'd say he'll go to distance. Like, there's only so much we learn about. Like, I'd watch a lot of Moylett's fights on the Murphy's Boxing Facebook streams. That's kind of the lengths you're going to, watching cards from Boston at 2-3 a.m. and you're watching them on your laptop in the kitchen or whatever. But I haven't seen enough of his fights against good quality opponents. But I know Ray has just this very good way of winning fights. You know, he's got a way of pulling them out of the bag. So it'll be interesting.
Yeah, and we had Paddy Collins in recently, Kev. He was talking about he's 8 fighters on that card, so he's centrally involved in the whole thing. And he was just saying, I was just saying, is he frustrated that these opportunities don't come along more often to showcase his talent in Ireland? And he was like, oh, I love getting the Aer Lingus points and stuff, like tongue in cheek. But he was making the point that there's never really been a culture of professional boxing in Ireland. We have these one-off, like Bernard Dunn shows or maybe Steve Collins a little while further back. But why do you think that is? Why do you think it's never really captured the imagination of the masses?
I don't know. Maybe it's just the decisive way that Bernard Dunn was ended, you know, by Poon Sawat in 09. That kind of seemed to just tie a little bow around it, and everybody went away for a while. I think Andy Lee could have been one. Like, we see his popularity in his post-ring career. People are taken with the story of Andy Lee, but he had his biggest nights in America. He won his world title in America. He fought Quillen in America. He fought it against Saunders in Manchester. If any of those fights had taken place in Dublin, I know there were discussions to get some Andy Lee's biggest nights here in Dublin. It maybe could have changed the game. You're looking at Katie Taylor, was someone that everyone in Irish boxing thought would change the whole thing and fight back in Dublin, bring the crowds. That hasn't happened. So there seems to be just the biggest names outgrow Ireland. And the mid-ranking names, their biggest opportunities have been in other countries as well. As well as that, like, I don't know how big the boxing following, like the mobilised boxing following in Ireland is, but it's capable of growing if someone just gets behind it and backs it. So
yeah, it's a common thing that's spoken about, the casual fan in Britain and tapping into that market. And it's not for the want of trying. Like, there are great promoters in Ireland doing their best, like the Celtic Clash, like, seem to capture the imagination, but that's very much boxing purists. And it's going to be difficult to pervade the masses without TV backing. At least this fight next weekend has, you know, TV behind it.
Yeah, absolutely. That's what I was saying. Like, that, the fact that it is on TV, that this is how you get people hooked on it. And, you know, especially if Ray puts in a really good performance, and there's pressure on him because I'm sure he feels that he's fighting in front of his home fans. Like, you mentioned Bernard Dunn and Poon Sawat, but I can remember just the way the point emptied the night that Bernard Dunn was beaten by Kiko. Like, people discussed it, and they'd no problem coming along to watch Bernard Dunn winning his European title, and then as soon as he was beaten, you know, there was almost an attitude of, oh, like, that's it now. Now, obviously, he answered. And I think even after the Poon Sawat fight, he obviously was well beaten that night. But people stayed there. They applauded him out of the ring because they said, you know what, you gave us one of the greatest nights earlier this year when you won the world title against Cordoba. So, it's very much, look, we see it in other sports in this country where we do love winners.
Entertainment junkies.
Yeah, and we get bandwagons, and maybe that's what it's going to take. We need to get another Irish boxer to, you know, start building it up, and then we can all get on the bandwagon.
I'd say it needs something like an Eddie Hearn to come and promote Katie Taylor in Dublin, and then the card that he builds around that can maybe help other boxers become famous, so that when, see, the boxing promoters in Ireland are a little bit smaller. They're a lot smaller than the Eddie Hearn's Matchroom outfit. So they're constantly kicking and, you know, trying to swim upstream and trying to get 1,000 people into a hall rather than 10,000 people into an arena. So once something starts, other things can build. I think Ray Moylett on TV can help it along as well. Like, but boxing doesn't help itself by getting, you know, constantly gets controversial headlines and stuff. Like, a lot of boxing interviews you hear, kind of, it's like the key change in a pop song. It's like, so they'll go, so you won a gold medal and that's wonderful. Now, boxing's had a lot of controversial moments in the last year. What do you say to that? And nearly every interview kind of has that tone. You don't really get it in other sports. Like, you don't interview Johnny Sexton about, so you've won World Rugby Player of the Year, isn't that great? But rugby's had some, negative, you know, it doesn't always have to take place in every interview either, so.
It's true.
What about Eddie Hearn, right? Has obviously Katie Taylor, John O'Carroll now. Like, that's maybe the kind of night you're looking at where Katie Taylor and John O'Carroll have world title fights in Dublin.
Yeah, because, like, it's nearly 4 years exactly since Macklin Highland at the point, and
John O'Carroll was on
that card. Spike O'Sullivan was on that card. Luke Keeler won on that card. Like, there was a good Irish crew on the undercard, and obviously Macklin lost, so that kind of took the air out of the balloon a little bit. But that could have been, as Kevin said, like a showcase for a lot of other Irish talent. And if Eddie Hearn takes a punt on something like that, maybe not necessarily in Dublin for reasons that are pretty obvious, but like elsewhere in the country, you know, we could have a big card with Katie headlining.
If Macklin won that fight, he was coming back once or twice anyway. I think it was all agreed. So that was, yeah, like I say, just, you know, these little diversions take place and suddenly the whole card comes off the road. But yeah, if Macklin won, Hearn was coming back with Sky again. Like, so I think the attendance that night was probably a bit disappointing. Half full Tree Arena with what would have constituted a good card for Irish boxing enthusiasts. You had Fitzgerald against Spike O'Sullivan, which was an unmakeable fight until Eddie Hearn came in, and you know, 5 years of nonsense talk, suddenly he said, right, here's enough money for both of you to take it, and they did.
And then John O'Carroll, Declan Garrity didn't even make it onto TV, and it was one of the best fights of recent years, so we obviously got to see it again.
But like you're saying, John O'Carroll is Katie Taylor's stablemate at Matchroom Sports, but he's with MTK as well, so not going to be fighting in Dublin anytime soon. Their ban is still in place, so that's not going to be happening, unfortunately. And he's going to have the biggest nights of his career either in America or Belfast.
Yeah, well, I mean, what I suppose I was suggesting that is, if he does win a world title, you know, maybe his dream is to fight, have a world title fight in Dublin, and maybe he has to make a decision himself, like whether...
Yeah, well, can he convince MTK to, you know, to turn and to allow him to end the boycott and say, yeah, he can fight in Dublin, and then maybe some sort of movement can be made behind the scenes between police, insurance, MTK, whoever, like, or not, or does he leave them? I don't know, but yeah, he seems to be one of the people who could maybe transcend or cross over. You know, we're always looking for people who can cross over, and I would have thought since the first time I met Carroll, he can do that. Like, especially then when he went and after he beat Garrity, he won the prize fighter tournament.
Yeah,
it's been like, so that's 4 years ago. I really thought it would happen sooner, but he is on the brink of something big. I think he's a fight or two off a world title now, isn't he? So,
and a great backstory as well. It is just a shame, the MTK thing, where two of the biggest fights this month, Frampton Warrington and John O'Carroll, are sort of blacklisted in the Irish media. We can't speak to...
And Fury Wilder.
So, like, it's just... And obviously Michael Conlon, Paddy Barnes, like, it goes right the way down. And do you think there's legs in it, Kevin? Do you think this ban can continue much longer, or is it just sort of...
I thought, because they have a new... MTK have a new guy called Bobby Allen, taken over. I would have thought maybe they'd start to make moves to relax the ban, but it doesn't appear to be taking place. And they have a massive UK contingent, and Fury is, you know, making inroads in the USA and the UK, and he's not stopped from talking to their media, and they're happy enough. They don't care that the Irish guys can't talk, you know, to these fighters. So it doesn't really appear to be affecting their bottom line. So I don't think it's going to go anywhere. Like, promoting in Ireland it's a hassle. Like every British promoter who's ever come over here to promote cards in Dublin, I think there was the special nights down in Mill Street and stuff like that. And they talk about those nights, and Adam Smith still harks back to coming over here with Sky Sports, but those are like few and far between, I think, and they use up all their cliches for another 10 years about Irish eyes are smiling, and then, you know, it's back to Sheffield and Birmingham.
Yeah, and that card next week, obviously Roy Sheehan's back on TG Car, so another chance for him to perform, and Spike, who I think deserves enormous credit for, like, persevering in a time when professional boxing was kind of in the doldrums a little bit. Like, he, great performance on that Macklin card, co-headlined a pay-per-view with Chris Eubank Jr., obviously fought Billy Joe Saunders before that, and got his big shot over on the Canelo undercard, obviously came up short there, but, you know, he's plugged away, and he's going to have one last bite of the cherry here, and hopefully he can make a push at light middleweight.
He dusts himself down and goes again. Like most of the time when you see guys coming down the weights at an advanced age, Spike's about 34 now. It's usually bad news, but Spike there's always been talk that O'Sullivan could make it down to light middleweight. Just never really did need to. And you saw the rehydration of himself against Lemieux. It was a cruiserweight against the super middleweight on the night. So it'll be interesting to see what he can do. But the people of Mayo, I'm sure, will give him a good reception. Hopefully he's in a good fight. Have you seen his opponent? Or
no, I think it's a bit of a takeover job, to be honest. But you did a good piece with him and Ronnie O'Sullivan recently. That was good.
Yeah.
What was that like?
It was a bit of crack. Spike set it all up.
He
was
did he?
Yeah, I was just, had a few ideas of things to do. I'd keep in touch with Spike and said, like, there was no real reason for it at all. But I saw Ronnie was on tour around Ireland, and I know that Spike is a big fan. I said, I think it would be just a bit of crack to get you in the same room together. And so I got Spike to put his journalism head on and think of a few questions and stuff like that. And yeah, we met up at a hotel in Cork and just had an hour talking nonsense. They're big fans of each other. I think the reason I did it was I think I saw them congratulating each other on a victory or something like that on Twitter. And I thought, they're fans of each other. They're individual sportsmen, both mavericks. Just put them in a room together and see, you know yourself, like,
yeah.
Sometimes these things work, sometimes they don't, like, but...
I'd say Ronnie would have been a good boxer if he had gone for it.
Yeah, I'd imagine so, yeah. He's such a dedicated genius, isn't he? Like, yeah. He's just a really smart guy. You really felt his, you felt his aura in the same room as him. You'd ask him a standard question that you'd ask most sports people. Gone then. He's gone for 8 minutes, you know, with well thought out, considered essays on everything. You know, he was brilliant material, all right, yeah.
Yeah.
And he was very much like interviewing a boxer. A lot of the same questions would just translate, like, you know, did your father push you into this sport? Yeah, and then he goes off. And, like, Ronnie comes from a long line of boxers as well. I think they called him the Fighting O'Sullivans, you know, back in the day. His uncle was British champion. I think his granddad was a boxer as well, so...
Yeah, yeah. It's well worth seeking out. It's on your social media channels. People find it there.
Yeah, yeah.
And there is something about interviewing individual sports people, isn't there, Phil? It's kind of... they've got a different way of thinking. Yeah.
That's it. Like individual sports, like, there's nowhere to hide. It's all up to you. And the two sports, obviously, you know, if you're a fighter and you lose, like, it's there for everyone to see. Same with snooker. Like, if you're Ronnie O'Sullivan, okay, he's not used to losing that much. But anytime you watch snooker, you always feel sorry for the player that's sitting in the chair watching their opponent clean up. And said, if you're having a bad day, like golf, anything, you know, It's all down to you. You don't have team members to pull you through.
Yeah.
So it's brutal in that way.
Because, like, doing one-on-ones with team sport players, it's like they have to toe the party line, but boxers are the party line. They have to just get on with it.
And like I saw, like Ronnie was saying, like how he came up, he learned his trade playing against Mark Williams, John Higgins. He said we were like three Mexican boxers. We were like, you know, Marquez, Barrera, and Morales. Like, so he knows his boxing history. He's into it. And like, even the comparisons he was able to weave between them, and they did make sense. You know, they all brought each other up, and those guys are all in their 40s now, and they're still the best players in the world. It's
for sure, yeah. Right, so among our top fighters at the moment is undoubtedly two-time world champion Ryan Burnett. The Adam Booth charge is into recovery mode after losing his title to a freak injury earlier this month. Andy caught up with his former stablemate to get the latest on that and more earlier on.
How do you reflect on the fight now that it's been... about a month, hasn't it, since the fight? And
yeah, it's been a month, and it's still so hard to take. I mean, I was just settling into things. I was just starting to find my range and everything. I thought that next few rounds I was going to start to take over. I was going to start upping my tempo and stuff. And it was just a freak accident. That's what they've put it down to, just a complete freak accident. And it is what it is.
Had you felt anything in training in the build-up to the fight?
No, nothing. I mean, just the normal little niggles that you would get in training, but there was nothing nothing around my back, nothing in my stomach, nothing at all. Everything was, I was 100%.
Mm. And I've watched the fight again last night. Was it the third round that it initially occurred?
Yeah, so right near the end of the round, I was just feeling something in my side where just wasn't right, and any time I was throwing my right hand, I just felt as if my side was twinging a bit. So I got back into the corner, and I said to Adam, "Look, there's something not right here. I don't know what it is, but I just feel something." And he said to me, "Well, go out into the next round, see how it goes." And when I went out and I threw that right hand, it just felt like someone had pulled my insides out. It was excruciating, but I said to myself, like, I'm not going to go out with a count, so I'll try to get my feet in.
I don't know, you can correct me if I'm wrong, but I've watched the fight a few times, and I actually think I heard you, while you were slipping and moving your upper body, you're actually shouting with that in pain. Is that true? Like, was that right? I thought I heard you go, ah, when you were moving, simply doing a head movement.
Yeah, when I got back up off the floor and I went into the corner and he was unloading everything, I think adrenaline kept me going. But, I mean, for me to move like that, the doctors had told me I just should not have been able to do it. But the injury that I have, they said just, you shouldn't have been able to do it. It's just fighting instinct, I suppose.
And what is the exact injury?
So they'd said that I've ripped my internal oblique. So I've completely ripped my inside muscle, and the muscles slightly come off my hip bone as well.
Oh.
So they said I'm going to be out for around about 6 months.
It's a long time. And what are you able to do now in terms of training? Or
I can't do anything. I mean, I'm sitting in the house and I'm pulling my hair out. I said to Adam, is there anything I can do? And he said, just simply gauge it by pain. So I went and got my bike, tried to do a bit of a cycle, but I was in agony. So I just had to put the bike in.
It's part of your body that affects everything, yeah.
I was in agony. So I'm just gonna enjoy Christmas, and then after Christmas I'm just gonna see where I am and take it from there.
I know you're in pain now, emotionally more and physically, but in the long term, it might work out. I've just been that you will get a fight with the winner of this tournament, because the nature of your loss, it doesn't reflect badly. It was a fight you were winning. And that once this tournament plays out, by then you'll hopefully be recovered and back into full health. And a shot at the eventual winner will definitely be on the cards. Is that something you're aiming for?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, there's a lot. We've got a lot of options on the table. I can do a lot of things now. And you know yourself, Adam's very good with when it comes to this stuff. Mm. So I've simply said to Adam, look, let me enjoy Christmas and come the new year. We'll both get our heads down. And
what weight do you think you'll be after Christmas?
Yeah. Stop.
Tell me a little bit. It seems, because the tournament was a tournament, it seems kind of unfair that you have to retire injured and you don't actually get to continue being the champ. I know there's a fight at the end when you come back, but that must be a bit of a pain. It's because it just feels like there's an injustice involved.
Yeah, I mean, it's like a loss without a loss. I mean, they've taken my world title off me and I don't feel like I've been beaten. I was going to win that fight. That fight was mine. I know it was. And I'm now sitting here at Christmas without my belt, and it just feels so unfair. But I mean, this is fighting. Things happen.
It's funny because Ryan, it's probably the best I've seen you box in those three rounds. Now Danair was dangerous, and he landed some good shots because he's just like experienced champion, and it was probably as good as I've seen Danair box in a long time. Yeah. But it was the best I'd seen you box, and for it to happen like that. it's a complete freak, and I know you must be gutted.
Oh, I mean, I'd be sitting up in my bed at night time just pulling my hair out, thinking about what if just having them happen. But I mean, you could go over these stories all day long. You just have to take it how it is and move on from it, and that's all there is to it.
Some real forthright stuff there from Ryan Burnett speaking to Andy earlier in the week. Just really unfortunate, isn't he? He's few fighters have been blighted by so much misfortune as Ryan Burnett.
Yeah, he has quite a story of it, all right. He would have been in line to go to the Olympics for Ireland, but unfortunately in front of him was Michael Conlon, and so he had to turn professional. And before he even got started, he had a brain scan failure, and you know, he's fighting at a lighter weight where it's much more difficult to get people behind you. So he eventually gets allowed to box. He's homeless, he leaves Hatton, he's all over the place, but he always had talent, and he always had smart people backing him. And as Andy Lee has outlined before, Adam Booth doesn't just train anybody, but he knew immediately that Burnett had something about him, and Ryan's got this like laser-like focus as well. Burnett, I remember even seeing on his Facebook page, this is 2015, here's what I'm going to do, 2016, here's what I'm going to do, 2017, I'll be unified world champion. And it's a lot of boxers have to have this cockiness to get in the ring and this real belief in themselves. But Burnett, no matter what life has thrown at him, has had that. It's just it's strange. He's not a bigger name, really, in Ireland like he should be. You know, he's achieved a lot in boxing, more than most people in the last 25 years. Yeah. Even in history, really. Like, he's one of Ireland's most successful ever boxers. And maybe it's better off he got injured in that World Boxing Super Series, though, in UAE.
It's murderer's row in that tournament,
yeah,
isn't it?
Yeah, absolute killers. Like, I mean, fair play to Burnett for even entering the thing, because Tete's in the Who Needs Him club, isn't he? Nobody really seemed to want to fight him. Burnett's had offers to fight him in Belfast loads of times. Hasn't really, you know, bitten at that. And then suddenly he enters a tournament with him and in UAE, but you're getting well compensated for it as well. And yeah, no doubt he felt he'd win the tournament too, like, so.
I'm sure, like, he's got that X factor on his side and age as well, so I'm sure he'll come again, and he's in the right hands with Eddie Hearn and Adam Booth. I'm sure they're going to guide him in the right way, so hopefully we wish Ryan the best and hopefully he's back soon. Anyway, time to get on to the main event of this weekend as Deontay Wilder gets set to square off with Tyson Fury at the Staples Center in Los Angeles. A good tweet from Adam Catterall I saw kind of set the scene well. He says, imagine saying in January that the most important heavyweight fight of 2018 won't involve Anthony Joshua. Well, it doesn't, and here it is. So that's just the way it is. Like, it's, I was among those who didn't think it was going to happen, but...
Yeah, I didn't think it would happen. Even when they said it, I was thinking, just keep an eye on, like, we've seen Tyson Fury in arranged fights before. Obviously, David Haye springs to mind where it never happened. But, yeah, here we are, a few days out, and it's going
to
happen.
It evokes my favourite Michael Bufferism as well. Somebody's always got to go. So he's not going to be on the mic. It's showtime, obviously, so it's... Jimmy Lennon, but who do you think has more to lose, like leaving the belt and the undefeated records aside? Who has more to lose, Simon, do you think?
It's hard to say because of the rematch clause. If it was a one-off and then the winner moves on and faces Joshua.
I think the rematch clause is dependent on, like, if Wilder cleans Fury out in a couple of rounds, we won't be seeing it again. And similarly, if Fury, it's a 12-round schooling job, I don't think we've seen it again either, you know?
Well, I don't know, but you there when they were writing the contracts up.
No, I'm just saying, like, it's. I think it's dependent on, if it's a cracking fight, they're going to be happy to do it again, but I think Showtime aren't going to be putting it on pay-per-view again if it's a stinker, you know?
Like, if Fury loses, the Joshua fight's always there. If Wilder loses, the Joshua fight's always there. Because of the way heavyweight boxing is, those are the three best guys, and they're all going to fight each other, or one would hope. I think if Fury wins, it really propels him back into the mix.
Mm.
If he loses, it's while he was off for so long, and Wilder can move on, and maybe Fury will have to build himself up, maybe fight Joseph Parker or something like that to keep in the mix, or Dillian White. I don't know if anyone's the biggest loser. Depends if it's a total wipeout, maybe, but which I don't think it will be.
Yeah, given the circumstances, like, the odds are intriguing because it's kind of a pick'em with the bookies, and like I would, given the circumstances, I would have Wilder as the favourite, just conditioning and...
But Fury, funnily enough, says if it wasn't for his 2.5 years out, it wouldn't be a pick'em fight. Everyone would be saying Fury's going to win, hands down.
Mm.
So he thinks the only reason people are questioning him is because of the time out of the ring, which, you know, you can't...
That's a huge reason.
Absolutely.
I disagree with him, though. I don't think if he... Let's say he fought Wilder, 6 months after Klitschko, without having ever taken time off, there'd still be a lot of people picking, you know, Wilder to do him. Like, I'm fairly sure of it.
Yeah, absolutely. I think Fury, obviously, has the most to gain, though. Because if he wins, then people, like, just say, wow, I mean, this guy was never beaten in the ring, had to give up his titles, 2.5 years out, lost a load of weight even between his comeback fights, and now he's after taking out Deontay Wilder. It'd be massive.
And he's getting a lot of credit, doing a bit of a victory lap of sorts, you know, for the redemption story, which is remarkable, and he deserves the credit he's getting. But is there an element, even subconsciously, where he thinks he's already won just by getting into the ring, and he mightn't be... Like, I wonder how much tactical focus has been on this fight, or is it more just, I made it here and I'm getting my $10 million repeated?
Well, I think that's probably the public, you know, stuff that you hear in the media. But I've no doubt he's working very hard behind the scenes to pull off a tactical victory. But yeah, there has been a lot of chatter, all right. He's already won by getting to this stage. He's won his own battle, but it's a different thing coming up against Deontay Wilder, and who knows if his tactics are going to be successful. He doesn't have Peter Fury in his corner anymore, who seemed to have come up with the game plan to beat Vladimir Klitschko on the night.
Yeah,
he doesn't have him, and that seems to be a real weakness for me. Like,
And Andy Lee was talking earlier in the week that Fury had contacted him to come in to lend his expertise to the camp, and obviously Ricky Hatton's since been drafted in, and Freddie Roach is going to be the cut man. Mm. It's like some sort of dream team he's cooked up.
Yeah, well, Hatton was there for his last fight as well.
Yeah, but Hatton's in like a cheerleader capacity, and I think Freddie Roach is like chief second stroke cutman. So, like, Ben Davison's role in this, again, he deserves a lot of credit.
It's a huge night for him.
For getting him. Like, this is a huge, what a step up. This is like going from Grimsby Town to...
like what Packy was saying to us a few weeks ago when he came in and had to train Kevin McBride for Mike Tyson, like baptism of fire.
Mm. But, and Packy also made the point that he has this relationship with his fighters and has been in their corner so often that he knows, even by looking in their eyes, maybe I need to pull him out or whatever. You can't imagine Ben Davison's going to pull the trigger if Wilder is landing heavily on Fury, he's not going to be the one to throw the towel in. Do you know what I mean?
Well, the thing is, though, if Fury or if Wilder does land heavy, you kind of think that's it. It's done. Like, I don't know. As good as Wilder's right hand is, will he get it clean on Fury's chin? Fury takes risks. He leaves his chin out there. But a lot of the time, he has enough head movement where he can move back, and it's not going to be the full... He's not going to get the full effect of a Wilder right hand.
Yeah, absolutely. And I would have said, like, a prime Fury, like the Klitschko Fury has enough to get out of the way. But he some of the Pianetta overhand rights missed him by quarter inches and stuff. And I just think Wilder's a bit faster and a bit more clinical, a bit more of a killer instinct. I think he'll probably catch him. I've changed my mind in this fight.
I've
changed my mind in this fight five times in the last 24 hours. Like,
I tend to change my view just before the fight even starts. When they come into the ring, like, oh no, you can tell by the look of them. Yeah. And I watched a few of the fights back. Obviously, watched I went from watching Fury's win over Klitschko to Pianetta. Now, thing is, Wilder is ringside, and he's shouting at Fury while the fight's going on. He says he's coaching him, but how, you know, is Fury holding back? Is he saying, "I'm not going to give him everything. I'm not going to give him all"? Like, is he going to change styles? Is he going to go southpaw?
Yeah, I think he will. I was watching them fight. If you watch Ortiz and Wilder, Wilder got hit with straight right jabs all night long, and I was just watching, going, if Fury just puts that in the cassette player, and just says, "Right, I'm just going to stand southpaw and just jab all night long."
Mm.
And funny, you bring up Paddy Collins and talking about the Kevin McBride Mike Tyson fight, I can see him just leaning on Wilder, wearing him down, jab, 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 wearing him down, and I can see Fury coasting to a comprehensive points decision.
So there's that, and then I think
probably might get hit in the face, not down.
Yeah, but even I wonder this. His conditioning. He looks like he's in good condition now, Tyson Fury.
Yeah, but if you're
Wilder,
there's gym fitness and there's ring fitness.
Yeah, absolutely, and you know, if you're Wilder, you're thinking, okay, if he does switch hit and he's facing Fury, who is in the southpaw stance, it's harder to get the right hand on him. Because Fury's not going to walk onto a shot because he tends to be fighting defensively. Mm. So it's going to be harder to get that right hand on the chin. Why not just go to the body and really test out Fury? Even the last round of Fury and Klitschko, Fury looks tired in that last round. Wilder is obviously lighter, he's more athletic. He's not going to tire. If Fury schooled him for 11 rounds, but he tired in that last round, Wilder has enough ammunition that he could land that right hand and he'd completely back himself to do it in the last round.
Yeah, I just think the inactivity is too big a hurdle to overcome. You know, it's for someone who's so reliant on timing and movement, like it only takes one shot from Wilder to turn the fight on its head, literally. Like, you know, Fury...
I tend to agree with that as well, yeah. Like, it's just a long time out to start taking these big punches, all right. But I covered a few of the Tyson Fury fights... on his way up. I did the Klitschko fight, but I did a few in the middle. And the one, I used to love watching him. You know, he has this reputation as being a boring kind of guy. And we saw that when Peter Fury came into the camp. He was suddenly this kind of, he was switching and he was boxing southpaw against Kevin Johnson and Martin Rogan. And it was all very formulaic. It was quite boring, but it was very effective. And he said, this is the game plan that's going to beat Klitschko. And it did, I suppose. But before that, he got himself clipped in three fights in a row. It was Nikolai Fuerte, Nevin Pajic, and Steve Cunningham. And he was down in two of them, and he was nearly out on his feet, I think, against Fuerte. He wouldn't have been in tremendous condition, but he did get clipped clean with big right hands in all those fights. And that's when the fight became absolutely fantastic to be at. Because Fury, when he gets hit, turns into this kind of like a psychopath, like in the ring. It's absolutely brilliant to watch.
Only one springs to mind because that was his US debut.
He mauled him. Like, I know Cunningham's like a cruiserweight, he's a smaller guy, and Fuerte and Pajic are nothing to write home about. So it's totally different to Deontay Wilder. But Deontay Wilder is he's a terrible boxer in a lot of things he does.
His footwork is like, I'm watching his feet against Ortiz as well. They're so wide. Yeah. He's off balance a lot of the time.
But funnily enough, I think it's interesting you make the point about preparing for Klitschko, but you knew exactly what Klitschko was going to do. Stopping him was a whole other issue. Like, he was so good at it that it was nearly impossible. But Fury got that down. Whereas you don't know what Wilder's going to do. He doesn't know what he's going to do. Like, he can knock you out off his back foot. swinging off balance.
Yeah.
And Fury can't prepare for that. This is arguably the only time he'll ever face someone more unorthodox than he is. So for that reason, that's why I would pick Wilder in this fight. He doesn't need to be perfect. He just needs to land one big shot. And I think given the timing, Fury's not going to have those acute little, you know, perfect moments. And I just think Wilder might catch him.
Are you thinking early?
Possibly, yeah. Because, like, you remember when... I don't want to put him in the same bracket as Andre Ward necessarily, but when Andre Ward fought Kovalev the first time off the back of a bit of inactivity, he got caught in the second round, I think, or dropped in the first round, possibly. But he warmed into the fight and won the fight.
Yeah.
It was contentious, but I thought he won. And then he won conclusively the second time. I think Wilder's best chance is actually in the opening couple of rounds when Fury is warming to the task a bit. So that's where I'm on it anyway.
Yeah, no, like that's...
Phil Egan, it's 2-1. Comes down to you. No, the deciding vote.
That's what I'm thinking. It could end early, but then if Fury is allowed to grow into the fight, then I can see him winning on points. So, like, it's gonna. I can't wait for it because I will be. I do. I'm not going to hide the fact that I want Fury to win. Just what he's been through, and I kind of like the thoughts of Fury and Joshua. I just think Fury be box office in the build up to it. I think Eddie Hearn and Anthony Joshua's heads would be melted. Yeah. They're going to be watching the fight,
yeah,
regardless of what Joshua said, and they're going for it. They want Wilder to win. It's they a, want that.
That's a really interesting point because the anniversary of Froch Groves was recently, and Eddie Hearn's been on the gravy train ever since. Like, the boxing's just blown up in Britain, and he's been driving force, but he's not invited to this party. Like, he's been almost out of spite, Frank Warren and Tyson Fury, with Showtime and Steven Espinosa and Al Heyman and all those 15 guys in PBC have cooked up this thing and left him out of the loop. And this is probably the first time where he's... they've probably made it out of spite, but I'm glad they've made the fight.
Yeah, and Joshua seems to be this sort of kind of champion in the Klitschko ilk. He likes to control things. He likes the fight to be on where he says, when he says, and you're getting paid as much as I tell you you're getting paid.
Yeah.
And that's the way Klitschko seemed to operate. And... it's cancelled. I've got a calf injury, you know, and you're wrecking somebody's head all as much as you want.
Yeah.
Joshua seems to want to do that now as well, and this is something they can't really control. And if Fury does win, it's going to be a nightmare for those guys, because if Fury does win, he won all of the titles that Joshua holds. He won them all in the ring, didn't lose them in the ring.
Yeah.
And now he'll win the other one if he does win. You know, he's going to imagine how insufferable he will be to the Matchroom contingent. He's going to say, I've won, you know, all your belts are mine. I've got the other one.
Yeah. You can imagine him, Anthony Joshua, I'm coming, you have my belts, I want them back. He'll take the mic, he'll sing a song. It's, in terms of the fight though, yeah, just, I can't believe we're going to get to see it.
Yeah.
And yeah, look.
Gun to your head, Phil.
You said, yeah, I see, gun to the head, I probably would say Wilder.
There you go.
Nobody's going to put a gun to my head. So, I can see the logic in why Wilder should win, but I'm just wondering maybe Fury, if he has, if there's a lot more in the tank than we think.
And just two last quick questions for the three of you. Everyone's just mooting this as puncher versus boxer, but obviously Wilder's an Olympic medalist himself. Do you think it is that simple? Is it just going to be one of them has to get the knockout and one of them's going to win on points, or is there wrinkles in this fight that people are overlooking?
I don't think Wilder can win on points. No, like has he won one fight on points in his entire career?
Stavern, yeah,
you know,
yeah. Knocked out in the round then on the next time.
Yeah, pathetic display from Stavern that time. But I don't think Wilder can win on points. And even during this conversation, I'm starting to lean back towards Fury on points. You know, that's how,
Fury win by knockout?
Well, that's the thing. If he gets buzzed, can he like? We saw Deontay Wilder was nearly knocked out by Ortiz.
Yeah. I reckon right hook, another 10 seconds and he was done.
And Fury can really put his punches together. Like, if Wilder is buzzed...
Yeah, he's not like one punch knockout, but...
He can do combinations that most heavyweights can't.
Yeah. So Steve Cunningham was a cruiserweight fighting against Fury, and Fury just had the size of him. Now, I know Deontay Wilder is 6'7" or whatever, but he's weighed in at like 16 stone before. If he's outweighed in this by, you know, 3.5 stone, you never know. Like, Fury could put it on him. I'd say though, like, the method of victory is probably Fury points or Wilder stopping him. But
and just last word, is the winner of this fight the number one heavyweight on the planet?
No, I don't think so.
Phil?
No, like, Joshua has all the belts apart from the one.
Listen.
I'm going to have to agree with the lads, yeah. Whoever, and Joshua is still number one, but the two boys are right in his heels.
Look, yeah. Fury did retire, you know, and what he's coming back and trying to do now is he's a new person. He's a different person. He's going to be a different fighter to the old champion who retired. So I think he's coming back the hard way, but he is going to have to win his belts back in the ring, just in my opinion. Joshua's slate ever since has been difficult to argue with. But if Fury does win and looks good against Wilder, I might change my mind on whether or not Joshua knocks him out, because I think it's a good test. If Fury has the physical attributes and the game plan that can beat Wilder and that can outmaneuver him and not get hit with the right hand at all, make him look silly, then I'll probably think, you know what, he might have enough to do the same to Joshua too.
Good stuff. Well, thanks a million for coming in, Kevin.
No problem.
Cheers, Simon. Or cheers, Phil. Cheers, Simon. And thanks to Tom in the production box as ever. That's our lot for this week. Thanks to you guys for tuning in. We'll chat to you next week.
Signals like Morse code, my soul start to grow colder than the North Pole. I try to focus on the hole of where the torch goes, in the tradition of these legendary sports pros. As far as I can see, I've made it to the threshold. Lord knows I waited for this a lifetime, and I'm an icon when I let my light shine. Shine bright as an example of a champion, taking the advantage, never copping out or canceling. Burn like a chariot, learn how to carry it. Maverick, always above and beyond average. Fuel to the flame that I train with and travel with. Something in my eyes say I'm so close to having a prize. I realize I'm supposed to reach for the skies. Never let somebody try to tell you otherwise. One flame, one bonfire, let it burn higher. I never show signs of fatigue or turn tired, cause I'm the definition of tragedy turned triumph. It's David and Goliath, I made it to the eye of the storm. Feeling torn like they fed me to the lions, before my time start to wind down like the Mayans. I show them how I got to grind down like a science. It sounds like a riot on hush, it's so quiet. The only thing I hear is my heart. I'm inspired by the challenge that I find myself standing eye to eye with. To move like a wise warrior and not a coward. You can't escape the history that you was meant to make. That's why the highest victory is what I'm meant to take. You came to celebrate, I came to celebrate. I hate losing, I refuse to make the same mistakes.